You're listening to the Reading Envy podcast, where I'll have what you're reading. Hi, everyone. This is Jenny. Welcome to the Reading Envy podcast. And today we have a new guest. It's Kim, a different Kim. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty great. I say that because we had another new Kim a few episodes ago. There's just a lot of great Kims out there that are readers. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Kim. I'm originally from Ohio, but I live in Texas right now, south of Houston in Missouri City. I have two kids that are out of college, so I'm kind of free, but I'm not free because I'm a teacher. So I've been teaching online. I'm a middle school teacher, but they have me teaching fourth grade, and I teach science and math. I just read on my off time. It's my little, especially this last year. So I try to keep up with my kids on reading.
Did you have to do completely new prep for all of that, or did someone hand you a whole bunch of stuff?
Oh, no. When you're a teacher, they just say, bye. Honestly, I never taught math before. I'm a science teacher to the core. Last year, when we went online, and then this year, all of a sudden, hey, you're teaching math. Okay. The kids will tell me, you're not much of a math teacher, are you? I go, no, we're going to do it my way. Because if you've ever done the new math, so I go back and say, we're going to do it my way.
Yeah.
We do it both ways. As a teacher, honestly, I kind of like teaching online. But just like I got ready for you within half an hour before I made my little notes, that's how I teach. Yeah. I think when you've done it for a while, it just comes to you. When I'm riding my bike or doing something, I'll think of the great ideas and then I throw it all together. And we've been doing really good online.
So. Oh, good.
But hopefully go back next year because I like in person. I like people.
Well, and with science, there's so many fun things to do with tangible objects, right?
Yeah. We went in fourth grade. It's a little hard, but we made rovers. I don't know. I have them make stuff and they really like it.
Yeah.
So if we can learn and then make, we do it. We do it pretty good online.
So they're doing
really good. If anything, these kids are going to be great at technology and organizing. And that's what I tell them.
Yeah. So, Kim, what kind of reader are you?
Well, I started as a non-reader. I know everyone says, I read all my life. I read, but I was always busy. I'm a sports person. So I was always playing tennis or swimming, and I just never had time for it. I read in school. And you know what? These kids nowadays, I tell them they're lucky because they do way more reading than we ever were made to do, I think. The kids in my class have to read 40 books in 9 months. And I think that's pretty good for fourth graders.
Yeah. Like actual chapter books, right?
Oh, chapter books. Yeah. They're not allowed to go. Yeah. 40 books. And I'm like, some of them are past it already. I'm like, ooh. And I tell them how many I've read. I didn't become a reader till I had kids and I had a little bit more time. So I kind of just read. I like to read to learn a little bit. And I love when I have a book that I learn something and I have to go look it up like, oh, I didn't know that happened. I love that. But I just read basically for enjoyment. Sorry. The problem was this year though, I tried to read 100 books and I did, and it was a job. So I took myself down to 80 and I'm at 22 right now. And I'm going to try to slow myself down because it all becomes a jumble. It was a job. And at the end, it wasn't as enjoyable as just getting a book, reading and enjoying it. So I'm trying to do that a little bit more this year.
So as a teacher, do you use books from the school's library or do you go to the public library? How do you get your books?
I go to the public library as much as I can. And put my name on the list. I'm in Fort Bend in Texas, and they have a pretty good library system. So I could go to mine and they'll give them to me. But I have to tell you, I know a lot of people like to read on a Kindle, but I like just to have a book in my hands. And in fact, the first book I'm reading, because when you're a teacher, what happens twice a year? There's the Scholastic Book Fair.
Oh, the best days.
Yeah, best days of our lives. But, you know, most of them are kid lower reading, but I always go, there's always an adult table. But this first book I found, and it was a good one. So, but a lot of times I buy them, but I always wait for the soft cover. And then I get book of the month. So I'll do that. And then I share with my one friend, but that's basically it. I'll go to the library.
That's great to have access. And I bet, you know, after spending a day in Zoom, you don't want to pick up a Kindle.
Exactly. And that I can't do it. I can't go on the computer. When you're on there all day, I don't know. I don't know how people do it.
Yeah.
So I get off it. And that's what we tell the kids too. We go, grab a book.
Well, did you want to go ahead and talk about that first book that you mentioned?
Sure. So as I was saying, the Scholastic Book Fair when you're a teacher. So I was looking, and at the adult table, they did not have any books that I had either read them all or wasn't interested. So I go and I see this book, and it's called Anthem. It's by Deborah Wiles. And I love the book cover. It's one of those things where you go, oh, I'm going to read that because of the book cover. So it has a giant, it's tie-dye, and it has a big peace sign on it. And if you open it up, you're reading through it, and it's like has pictures, not pictures like drawn or anything. Every chapter, she has either pictures from newspapers or just pictures from history with people that have sayings or have talked about something. There's three of these. It's a trilogy. So there's Countdown, Revolution, and this one's Anthem. So this one takes during the Vietnam War, right at the beginning of it. And what it is, there's a young girl named Molly, and they're watching the news, and Walter Cronkite was on. Cronkite at that time, I don't know if you remember, but that was the news. Now, I was born in 1965. I don't care. But this is 1968, but Walter Cronkite, I can remember him as a kid. Like, that was the news everyone watched. And honestly, when I read this book, you know, you hear about the Vietnam War and all that, and the draft dodgers and everything going on. This book goes through everything. Now, here's the thing. After I read it, I thought, this is the best book. Why have I never heard of this? What takes place is Molly, her parents, her brother gets his draft card, and he says he's going to leave. And his dad gets real mad at him because, you know, it's your country. You need to go fight. Well, he leaves. So they send him. The daughter, which this kind of makes me laugh, with her cousin, Norman, on a school bus. And they just take a trip to the West Coast, and they search them down. And as they go, growing up, I remember the hippies, and I'm going to call them that. But this whole story, I'm like reliving my childhood, like things I thought, did I like make that up? But I remember going, this is funny, when I was a kid going to the doctor, and we'd go by this house, or we'd call it the hippie house. And these kids would be sitting out there, and I'd look at them like, oh my gosh, they are just the coolest ever. And they'd be sitting there, you know, this, because this book ends at Woodstock. So I was looking, it goes from 1966 to 1969, which Woodstock was. Mm-hmm. But it is just, it goes through everything in here. Now, after I read this book, so I'm looking for the next one because I love this book. I never heard of it. Here, it's in the kids section. It's not even in YA. So this is why I wanted to write. I think I wrote to this author, and I'm not really like that. But I'm like, this is why that book is not being found. I think this book, you know, for kids to read it, they wouldn't get it. Because every chapter, if you were teaching this school, I think this would be good in high school to read this book if you're going through this. And every chapter starts with a song, and like there's songs like in a God of the Vita, Wendy, Bad Moon Rising, Come Together, and it has who wrote it, who sang it, and everything, and it pertains to the chapter you're in. It's like a movie to me,
but like a lesson plan.
I'm telling you, for all the teachers out there that teach in high school, this would be better than any history that I've ever seen. Like, I was learning stuff when you go through and you see the pictures. I can't even describe it. It has, you know, the pictures from Vietnam. It has the protests that are going on. There's some stuff that I never knew happened. You know, you either forget, I was too young, but I don't know. The other two books are the same with it. I think they're just great. They're just history. And she has those pictures. I would never want to listen to that or read it on a Kindle. You have to have the books for these. But I found these three books, and I was like, last year, that was my reading. Like, oh my gosh, I found the best trilogy ever. But that was just me. But I think they're in the wrong section that no one's finding them.
Well, it says the first one, it's called Countdown. It says that it got the award for 6 through 8. Do you think that's great or age?
I read that, but I can't believe that kids, I don't see kids, you know, reading this, that they get it.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a high school book, but I'm telling you, I love that book. And I'm thinking I might read it again. Like, if you don't know about that era, you know, we all hear about Vietnam and everything going on during that time and the protests. Then we went into, you know, it goes into Kent State and all that. I read stuff in there. I was like blown away.
I was having this conversation on Instagram the other day again. So we talk, people from my generation talk about this a lot. When you went to school, it was up to World War II. And then they talk about the civil rights movement, the end.
for 5 seconds.
Yeah. And everything's fine now, the end.
Yeah. And you go back every year and we got to go back to the American Revolution. You're like, oh my gosh.
I know, again.
Yeah. So I honestly, if I was a high school teacher and if I ever teach, they moved me up, cross my fingers next year in middle school. I put my name in for geography. I'm throwing that in there.
Yeah. But
that is just a good book.
So is it written, because you said they took a trip, right? So is it written as a novel or is it written as history? Okay.
All three books, she writes it as a story. They're all three stories. I read them backwards because I found this one first. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, she has two more. So it's a little story and it's all made up, but it's based on the facts. Then as you go through the chapters, then you'll see little clips from newspapers or what President Nixon was saying or Lyndon B. Johnson was saying. And it puts it all together, what this girl and her cousin and her brother are experiencing.
Gotcha.
With all the kids that were draft dodging. And then, you know, when they go to Woodstock, they meet some of the people. You know, she takes the history and puts it into her little story. The stories themselves aren't that good. It's the history around them that puts that person into that. It's like you or I, if we were living through that time, you know, right now, if we're living through that time and they put all the news clips and all that, you'd be like, oh my gosh. So yeah, it's a little story. Stories are just kind of good stories, but the history with them makes them really well told, I think.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
I loved them.
So you have Countdown. I was going to look at the other titles. Countdown.
She also wrote, I just found a new book. She wrote Kent State in prose. And that she's my favorite author now. People say favorite author, Deborah Wiles. She has some other books I just saw. I got to look them up. I just like how she does her history.
Yeah.
Because I get tired of historical novels with the romance. And then none of these have that in. You have your basic little story of someone living through it. And then she takes you through the history with that story. I like it.
I might go back and read these. I feel like I don't know enough about the 60s.
I'm telling you, there's stuff in there that I never knew that happened. And I love that in a book. You know the basics, but like we said, because they only teach you the nice stuff. Like Lyndon B. Johnson, I think he did quit his presidency because he knew he couldn't win that war. He said he wasn't going to run for president again. That's when Nixon ran. And then there's a something in here. It says from Nixon where he says, I'm not going to be the only president not to win a war. Now, right there. Yeah, right there. It gives you chills. Like, what? Like a president said that? Okay, so that's why we stayed in that war that long. And they have pictures of the Vietnamese in here and went on. That was a good find at my Scholastic Book Fair.
Absolutely. I've written it down for myself too. Well, for my first book, I've been waffling about what to talk about, but I'm going to talk about a novel from a first-time novelist called If or When I Call by Will Johnson. We're recording March 21st, and this came out just this last week. I did have a copy from the publisher, I should say. Will Johnson is better known. He's also from Texas, actually. You might recognize him. He was in the bands Centromatic and Monsters of Folk. And honestly, I don't know. Maybe those bands are still together. So he's really well known as a musician and a songwriter. And I think he's a drummer. And so this is his first novel. And it takes place in Missouri in a really rural, small town. Well, not really rural. Small town is a better description. One of those towns where in the old days, there was probably more going on and a whole community that rose up around that. But then that industry isn't there anymore. So there's these people, they don't have a lot of money, but they also don't have a way of going somewhere else. And so sometimes there's drug use, often there's drug use, but then there's also like, you know, you get a divorce, but the person you got divorced from is still in the only circle that you have. And so that has some weirdness to it too. And so he gradually introduces you to these characters, and there's just a few. I wrote them down so I wouldn't get them wrong. Parker, who has had this really severe health issue his whole life, but they've never really diagnosed it, partly because he can't afford to go to the medical appointments that he needs to get diagnosed. But it's kind of like epilepsy, but maybe worse. Like he has these fits where he loses consciousness, but he'll do and say crazy things. And then he has been married to someone named Melinda, but they're divorced and they have a child named Ben. And so they share custody of Ben. And then Melinda has a sister named Maureen. And so partway through the novel, Melinda and Ben move in with Maureen because they can't afford to live where they live.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it never is. And then Maureen is kind of having an issue too, just with her own you know, sense of self. And Melinda decides to go on a road trip. So partway through the novel, she's on the road, but she's like going like to this town in Missouri that she remembers going to as a kid, where there was this mansion with these fancy ladies in gray hair and red sweaters that would give out cookies. It's one of those places that is probably the only thing in town, but she wants to go back to it and see it again. And then she kind of gets a bug to travel because she's just really never been anywhere. You know, she's just lived in Missouri. And so she makes this deal with herself, like, if this thing happens, I'm going to go all the way to this town. Apparently, there's a town called Metropolis where there's a giant Superman statue.
Oh, Superman. Superman. Yeah.
You probably know it.
No, that's true. Yeah. Never been there, but that's true.
Yeah. I looked some of these places up. So what I really liked is, I think I said earlier how, I think we said this before we started recording, I've been trying to slow down my reading this year. And sometimes you'll encounter a novel that kind of slows you down just by how it's written. Like at first, I thought, oh gosh, like he's giving me so many details. Like he's telling me all the stuff that's on the shelves. I don't care about that, know. But you start to slow down, like, you know, like a pace of a small town where like literally all you have to do that day is to go get gas in your car and get a drink at the little gas station market. And so you might as well take the whole day to do that because there's nothing else to do, you know.
That's like the year of COVID, what we all did.
Yeah, I know. It has a lot. It has a lot of that same feeling. And so then like the characters are paying more attention to the music that they're listening to and what's on the radio. And so I would stop and I'd listen to the songs because they're all actual songs, you know. And so that was kind of neat. I felt really immersed in it. And like slowly, I found myself starting to really care about the characters in a way that I don't think I always connect with characters. Then there's this scene where Melinda's in this gas station. She can't afford to buy anything to eat, but the man who's working there can tell that she needs to eat. And he gives her the gas station chicken, you know, the kind of stuff that spins all day. I was in tears.
Oh,
and it's just a scene.
See, that's real life.
Exactly.
Like I like stories like that. Did you see that movie Nomadland? That's what that's like.
But I read the book that was based on.
She never talks in the movie and I loved it.
Oh, she never talks.
Well, hardly. It's the quietest movie, but the same thing. So those little towns, you think, oh, what's the excitement in those little towns? But there's like more life in that than in the big city where everyone knows.
I lived for 6 years in Indiana. And so 4 of those years I spent in a town called Greencastle, where there were 2 employers, the Walmart and the university. I felt like I lived some of that small town life where I worked, I made desserts at a restaurant. I worked at a church and I worked at the university. So I held down 3 jobs.
So you knew everyone in the town.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. Yeah. And it's such a different feeling. And there's like literally no businesses outside of that square, that main square. Yeah. It felt very familiar to me. And I had spent some time in Missouri too. So I feel like I know these places and these people. And
yeah. I think you have to be born there, but you see it. It's a whole different life.
Yeah. And you kind of get a sense of there are people that feel like they can't leave or they just never have thought about it.
Yeah.
Because you have to have some kind of, you know, income or momentum to do that. And so it's about the people that really don't leave. But I loved it. I thought it was really true to life. So I've been like giving it 5 stars everywhere and posting it everywhere this past week. So
I put it on my want to read list. That looks good. I like
it. Yeah, it's really good.
I like he lives in Austin, Texas now.
Oh yeah. There you go.
So he moved.
Well, what about your second book?
Okay. My second book is called Why We Swim by Bonnie Sue. And I can't remember how I heard of this book. I just don't even know how I found it, but I bought it because I swim all the time. And when you read this book, you're not a swimmer, or are you a swimmer?
I mean, only like on vacation I swim, but you know, like not otherwise.
Do you know how to swim?
Yeah. I mean, I took swimming lessons my whole life.
There you go. Because I'm a swim instructor also.
Oh,
so cool. I've swam. Now, my mom never could swim. I think this is part of it. My mom could never swim, so she made us swim at a small age.
That is true for me too.
Okay. So yeah. I could swim. Like I think back in the day, a lot of people didn't swim. And it has a section in this book where inner city wise, and this is interesting. This is another thing you think you know the truth, but it's not. Inner city wise, inner cities had the first pools where everyone swam. of every nationality, every color and everything. That was part of that. And then it got to the point where probably someone ruined it. Oh, some people can't swim here. It's only for people that have money. Because if you think about it, I remember when I was a kid, I always wanted a pool, but we lived in Ohio. You don't have a pool in Ohio. It's just because of the weather. But if someone had a pool, they were like, oh my gosh, you have a pool. That's the ultimate. But anyway, this author, she started swimming for pleasure. And she writes all about water. And it goes from like even the earth with water, the diseases of water. There is something. Benjamin Franklin used to swim daily in the Thames River. And he used to swim with no clothes on. That's Ben Franklin for us. And the day in London, it makes you laugh because these people were using everything. If you were sick, they had this thing. It says, and thus the English seaside resort was born, not for sun worshiping or frolicking, but for dunking oneself in the cold miracle cure of the ocean. It was the collective baptism of a country. And then it says back in America, then people caught on to that. And they had, after the Civil War, they had water clinics. And anytime that you were sick, they told you just go in the water. Water cures everything. I think that's funny. So they said, it says cold water was proclaimed the sovereign remedy for every ailment. Dunk your head in it for a fever, sniff it for a nosebleed. Take a cold mouth bath to cure yourself of the filthy habit of tobacco chewing. It's just interesting like that. But the best story in here, when I started teaching swimming, I couldn't, when I was an adult then, I couldn't, little kids teaching swimming, okay, they have to learn for safety. But I couldn't understand how a grown adult didn't know how to swim. Like in my mind, I'm like, how can you not swim? You just go in the water, you float. So my one best friend, we were swimming one day and we went down to the deep end. She goes, I can't go down there. And I said, why? I just looked at her like, what's wrong? I can't swim. And I could not believe that. Like in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is weird to me. But anyway, in this book, it goes through Olympic champions and everything. But in 2008, when we were in Afghanistan, there's a story about one of the, he was in the army. They started the Baghdad Swim Club. They were swimming in Saddam Hussein's palace pool. So this, I think he was a Green Beret. He noticed people were just taking a break. They were in the green zone because they captured Saddam Hussein's palace, which had 250 rooms in it. And this pool was everything because you're in the middle of the desert. So he noticed people from every nationality was coming. And then he noticed people were in the pool just like me. And he asked his buddies, he said, what are you doing in there? And the guy goes, I'm swimming. And he goes, you're not swimming. You're going to drown. So she tells the story. He started a swim. He started because people wanted to know how to swim. They swam in there for months in Saddam Hussein's pool. He had a swim team.
That's so cool. I've never heard that story.
Now tell me, why do we don't hear that on the news? But that's what's in this book. And then she has like different ailments from swimming. Like some of them, you know, swimmer's ear. Do you know what sea lice is?
Sea legs?
Sea lice.
Oh, sea lice. No, I don't know.
Okay, until I moved to Texas. I think I was in Texas. I was at the beach one day. And I heard this mom say to her boy, he was itching. She goes, you probably have sea lice. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what is that? But all it is larvae from jellyfish. And they get on your body and you itch. I know. It's called sea lice. Never heard of that one. I know. Don't go in the ocean. But anyway, but she just goes through, if you like to swim, she just goes through water. And it's like, to me, this is just, it was like a relaxing read. I love books like this where there's things like that Baghdad one. I would have never heard of that. And it's a smaller book. It's only, I don't know. You could read it a day. It's like 200 pages. But she just goes through everything with swimming, and it's really interesting. There is this one athlete, and I couldn't find it in here. I read it about 6 months ago. There's an athlete that got hurt. Her career was over, and she started swimming. Because swimming, a lot of times they do use for therapy, especially with athletes, yeah, and muscles. And she started long-distance swimming, and that was, I think she became a champion at that. Wow. So it goes into things like that. And I don't know, did you ever hear the story about Diana Nyad swimming from Cuba to Florida?
Mm-mm.
Oh, she has that in here too. But that took Diana Nyad forever and a day to do that. But she kept getting attacked by the box jellyfish and finally she made it.
Oof.
But I think part of it is because I'm a science teacher. When I find a book that has science in it and then facts, I love it.
Yeah. So
I just really like this book, Why We Swim. It's like If you swim, you read it. I don't know. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've never read this book, but I remember when it came out because I have a coworker who does open water swimming, and I definitely made sure that she was reading it. I think everyone she knows recommended it to her.
I'm telling you, I was going to recommend it to my friends that work at the YMCA where I used to swim with them. I'm like, it's almost a book that you want to buy people that swim, go, you have to read this.
Yeah.
Like absolutely. It's a keeper. I'm never getting rid of that book. In fact, when I was looking through it for this, I'm like, oh, I might read it again. And I don't really read books.
Yeah.
But there's just so many things you forget. And she has just interesting facts in here or little stories. I kind of like that. That was a good break.
My next book. Okay. First, I have to tell the story of how I found out about this book because that's part of the fun. Okay. So my public library did winter reading for adults this year, which I thought was amazing. And I think it was just January and February, but there was this bingo card and you could do these different activities and cross off things on the bingo card. And then if you got bingo, you got a prize. And okay. One of the bingo items was they have this service called your next five faves or the next five faves, where basically you fill out this profile, you answer a few questions, and a librarian sends you a list of five recommended books.
Oh.
And so you know how much I read.
Yeah.
I actually included my Goodreads link when I sent mine in because I didn't want them to recommend books that I'd already read. And I ended up being sent to a librarian who I'm Instagram friends with too. So we know each other. And so she actually dug super deep and she gave me recommendations for five books that were all different from each other that I had never read before. So she did great.
That's a miracle.
Yeah. So I immediately put one of them on hold because I hadn't even heard of it. And it really, I think it just came out because I was the first person to check it out. It's called Winter's Orbit by Everina Maxwell. It's another debut novel, actually. It's science fiction and it's not labeled as YA. I think it's kind of new adult, honestly, because it kind of feels like YA, but the characters are in their 20s and they're getting married. So it's not exactly, so it's part political intrigue, part science fiction, part romance. It's kind of a combination of those things. I would say for my taste, it's one dot over too far into the politics part.
but
good enough.
Yeah.
So basically there's this empire and all of the relatives of the emperor are basically pawns because through their marriages, they can make peace with one planet or another. This is actually a vassal planet is what it's considered. And so there's this guy, his name is Prince Kiem, and he's called into the emperor's office or whatever you would call it. And she basically says, I need you to get married. You're getting married tomorrow. And you're going to marry this. And it doesn't matter what gender. They're all different gender marriages. You need to marry Count Janin. Now, Count Janin is a recent widow. He lost his partner who was murdered. And that was the cousin of Prince Kiem. But they're about ready to renew this giant agreement between all these planets. And this.
Oh, so this goes planet to planet.
Yeah. And in this kind of system where they're trying to maintain control. And so he has no choice. But this guy, Prince Kiem, he's kind of a loser. He's kind of a playboy. He doesn't take things very seriously. He hasn't completed school. He didn't join the military. He doesn't really have a serious job. He doesn't do relationships. But this is all of a sudden where he has to do it right. The literal empire depends on him. He's a fun character. He doesn't know this person that he's marrying. And there's a lot of miscommunication type stuff that you usually find in romance because he's trying to be careful of that guy, to let him have any outs he needs to have. And the other guy thinks he's let him down somehow because they're coming from different cultures, not different species, but different planets that have completely different ways of thinking about how you react to each other and what your duty is.
Do they discuss the planets much?
I think in the middle, it kind of gets more into that part and the politics. And there's a definite negative history. You find out that the count who he has to marry is actually a suspect in the murder of his partner, his cousin. So the first guy's cousin, the second guy's partner. And then you kind of find out that guy maybe wasn't such a good guy. And so he had actually caused some problems. And apparently this planet, this vassal planet that they need to have a good relationship with is kind of essential in the mining of some raw material that's needed. And so, of course, the people who live on that planet feel a little taken advantage of. So there's that kind of, imbalance of power that's happening too. So it was really fun. Like I just recently finished watching The Expanse, you know, the last season of The Expanse. It has kind of some of that feel to it, where you have the people who, because of where they've been born, are basically living in different classes, and there's not a lot of movement between the classes, but then this marriage kind of changes that a little bit.
I like science fiction. I like that cover. I looked up the cover.
Yeah, it's a great cover.
Yeah, it's a good cover. Because I know one time I read something where you said, and I'm like you, if the cover looks like another cover, I'm like, I'm not going to read that. Because they all start looking the same. I'm like, wait, I think I just read a book with that cover.
I know. And I think sometimes they're trying to be like, well, I'm signaling to you that this is just like that. I'm like, yeah, but I don't necessarily want.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Just like it.
What's the name of this book again? I'm sorry.
It's called Winter's Orbit.
I had it on here. Yeah, that sounds like a good book. I love science fiction. Now the politics, maybe you had me there for a minute, like, oh, maybe not, but.
And I think it's kind of like, it makes it just so it's not just a romance novel, which I think is nice. Like I like romance novels, but I like for there to be a little bit more that goes on. Yeah. And so the politics in it just kind of heightens the necessity of them working it out. It's not just for their own happiness.
But you think it's older YA?
Well, I think it's not being categorized as YA, but I think I would categorize it in that weird category that they're trying to pull off called new adult. But
yeah,
I think
that's what my problem is. And I think anyone should be able to read anything, but.
Oh, sure.
I think that's what they're doing with YA anymore. I've noticed that because some books I go, there's no way this is YA. And I go find the second book and I'm like, ooh, that's YA. And I'm saying that because younger kids that are making that move into YA, I'm like, oh, that's kind of tricky.
Well, and there's nothing like explicit or anything in this. I mean, I don't think that's what the difference is. I think it's more that people are seeing that a lot of adults are enjoying YA still, and they're trying to figure out how to give them what they want in a like an adult way, which I just don't think, I don't know why they're really bothering. Like, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine for adults to read YA. But I think it's like the only difference is that the characters are a decade older, you know?
Yeah, that's why it's, I think it just comes to, because of being a teacher. If I read something, I'll read a book first. I used to do it for my librarian at my school. She'd have all these books that they were going to buy from the library, and she'd give me a couple because she couldn't read them all. So she'd go, here, and I'd kind of choose the ones that I thought had the good cover or whatever. And that's me, the cover.
Yeah, or that's a fun job.
There I go. And there was a couple of them, and I'd tell her, I'd say, this is a great book, except this happens in it. Maybe like a suicide or something.
Oh,
age of kids. And I'm like, I don't think we can as a teacher, I couldn't rightfully sometimes give that out. It's just kind of iffy. That's why we read it. And there's some of them we look at and go, no way. It's not worth the fight.
Mm-hmm.
They'll put it in the library. We just don't tell kids about it. Let them find it on their own. That's how we do it.
Yeah. Or like the surreptitious, like kind of put it on the table where they're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'll tell kids if they're mature enough, I'll say, hey, especially the kids that love to read, I go, there's a good book, but it's a little, maybe when you're in high school, you know, I teach middle school. So they're like, oh, and I go, but I think you can handle it. And I know if I know the parents well enough, they're fine. But
yeah,
it's a slippery slope there when you're a teacher.
Looking into your library and seeing if they have services like this, like I've used my public library for years, but I never thought about, you know, asking for reading advice. And I should have, obviously.
Yeah, I was good, but it's not like because I read fast, so I had that job. I would love that job. Maybe that's what I should do for schools. Say, hey, I'll read that, and then we'll move them on.
Yeah,
they would never do that.
Let's move to your third book.
I read a lot. My family, I have two kids that came out of college, and neither of them are readers. I did my best as a parent, but no, they don't like to read. They're too busy. Which, you know what? And I tell people at school, they'll have, you know, like I said, these kids in school are reading so much. I think it's great, but you can't make a reader. I really believe that. Some kids like to read, some kids don't. But anyway, my nephew came up and he says, you've got to read this book. The name of it is The Chicken Runs at Midnight. And I looked at him and I went, what? He goes, no, you have to read this book. It's called The Chicken Runs at Midnight. It's by Tom Friend. It's a true account and it's a baseball book. Now, do you like to watch baseball?
Nope.
I know. See, this is what we said at the beginning. I'm an opposite reader of you, this is great. This is why I like to look for different people, because then I don't like to stay in the same route.
Yeah.
So sometimes if I go out of my You know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I do like that kind of book. But anyway, okay, I'm a sports fan and I'm from Ohio, so I like all the Cleveland teams. So when you're a Cleveland fan, I don't know if you know this, Jenny, but our teams just were do or die, but they never win. Finally, we won an NBA with LeBron, but the Cleveland Indians, I don't know. It's been since like, I think 1954.
Wow.
And then the Cleveland Browns, we don't even talk about that. They're getting
like
better,
even the Cubs have won in that period.
Exactly.
Of time.
There you go. See, you even know that. The Cubs have won. Okay. So there's this game. Basically, let's go to this and I'll get to the game, because when I read this book and I went, oh my gosh, is this good? His name is Rich Donnelly. And he grew up in Steubenville, Ohio. And he's one of those kids. He's older. He's probably about 65, 70 now, I would say. From the day he grew up, he was always outside playing baseball. And you know, when I was a kid, we'd go outside and play baseball in the summer, especially light till dark. You'd keep hitting that ball with your friends and everyone played, girls, boys, whatever. So he was just that. And growing up in Steubenville, Ohio, and he was raised Catholic and he was an older boy. And he used to go to church and he used to play baseball. That was his life. And he'd go to school and he'd do his schooling, but he wanted his whole life, he would listen to the Pittsburgh Pirates on his radio. And he knew every player. So that was his goal in life. So he played in high school and that. And he finally did make it to the big leagues. He played a few years on the AAA team. He didn't go to Pittsburgh Pirates. He finally made it to the Pirates. Well, he didn't do that well, but he started coaching. And he wanted always, the best thing he said other than playing baseball and playing was to be the third base coach. Because the third base coach is the guy that if you're tied at the end of a game, you're going to send that guy in to score the run, correct? So he was a first base coach. And he thought, oh my gosh, like my life's over. I'm a first base coach. But it just goes through the history of learning baseball and wanting to be in it so bad. And Billy Martin's in here. Do you know the Yankees? Do you know Billy Martin, Jenny?
No, sorry.
No, see, I'm talking. But anyone that reads baseball, I'm reading it going, oh my gosh, I know that player. I remember that player. Billy Martin was a character. He was the manager of the Yankees. And he just was one of those that if you know baseball, you know Billy Martin. Anyway, here's the whole thing. He becomes this coach. And when baseball's a long season in the major leagues. I think it starts, well, right now they're playing already. So preseason. So what's this? March. And they'll go all the way to October. So he was away from his family for a long time. So it got to the part where he was going out. He'd go to baseball. And he had three kids. He had his daughter and two sons. And he was never with his kids. So, and then he started goofing around and he got a girlfriend. Well, his marriage broke up. And his one daughter would always write him notes when he was there. And her name's Amy. Through this book, they have letters from her because she'd always send her dad a letter before he left or when he came home. And she couldn't wait for him to come home, but then he was always busy and he had to go to another game. And being a girl in that time, you know, girls weren't allowed to play baseball. She was good in track. So anyway, he gets a divorce and I don't want to ruin it, but let's go back to my life. So I'm a Cleveland Indians fan. He ended up coaching the Marlins. And I believe in 1995, my team, Jenny, made it to the 11th inning. And we needed one out and the other team won. And I fell off the couch. I can remember it. My husband went to bed. He thought the Indians won. And I remember saying, where are you going? He goes, we're going to win the game. Well, we went into extra innings. So I don't want to ruin it for anyone that's reading this. But what happens is his daughter gets a brain tumor and he becomes he becomes guilty. And when he plays, he coaches for Pittsburgh. And then he coaches for the Marlins. She eventually does die because of her brain tumor. But there's something that she says to him like 2 years before they win this game against the Indians. And she says, Dad, the chicken runs at midnight. And he can remember her saying that. And it comes down to the end where the Marlins win. And when you read the story, here's me, the Cleveland Indians fan that I couldn't believe my team lost. And because of reading this book, I forgive it all. There was a reason why the Indians didn't lose. And I don't want to ruin it for you. But this book, if you believe in the afterlife of someone, it is the best ending of any book. Here's me when I know I read up a good book. I always finish a book and I say to myself, that was a good book. And I start laughing at myself like, what is wrong with me? But this book, I've just because I like baseball, but the whole story, I couldn't believe it at the end. After you read this, you believe in the afterlife. And there's something that happens in life. And after this, I forgave the Indians for losing because that poor girl lost her life. But her part of the story, it's just unbelievable. Because she always wanted her dad to win a World Series, and she died before he ever had the chance, and he won it, so he got the ring. My nephews play baseball, so my sister-in-law bought this for his whole baseball team. And I thought, oh, kids aren't going to read this. But if you're a Cleveland Indians fan, as you know baseball, it is a great book.
I will say I have read at least one novel that's about, well, that it has a lot of baseball in it, but isn't about baseball, and I can usually do that.
Yeah, if you don't like baseball, I think this got me because me being the Cleveland Indians fan, and I remember this game. Oh, yeah. Like I said, I'm telling you, when they lost.
You knew exactly what they were talking about.
I fell off the couch. I couldn't believe we lost. I went to bed that night. And my husband said, oh, they won. I said, they lost. And he said, what? I said, they lost. I can't even explain it. Like I was in the game. So, but then after reading this book, I'm like, oh, it was meant to be. If you ever want to read a baseball book. There's your baseball book. If you have one of your reading bingos.
Yeah, that sounds good. And I hadn't heard of this book at all, so I appreciate that.
Me neither. And I had to order it because I wanted it. And then I remember when I ordered it, I said, yeah, I'm looking for this book. You know, they always ask you, what's the name of it? Oh, The Chicken Runs at Midnight. And I remember the guy looking at me like, what? And I went, yeah, it's a baseball book. And he said, I never heard of that. I love when I go in a bookstore and I get them with a book that they've never heard of. And then the person looking up goes, oh, I got to read that. That's a good one. I'm like, ooh, I got a score.
It sounds like something you'd tell like a spy or something.
Yeah. But it's just a really good book. I enjoyed that one.
Well, is there anything that you're looking forward to reading next or that you're already reading?
Oh, I'm reading The Frozen Queen now. It's a fantasy novel. It's pretty good. And I kind of like, I love when they have a map at the beginning of a fantasy book. I know. So I just started it today, in fact, but it seems pretty good.
Is it the Becca Clark or the Bella Raven Frozen Queen?
The Frozen Queen. I don't know. I don't have it in front of me. I get a lot of my books now. I get them from podcasts, but I also
get them from... Is her name Phaedra?
No.
Okay. Is her name...
We're going to go through... I don't know. It's in the other room and I'm not going to...
It's okay. I'm going to keep looking. Is it Kaya?
No. I don't even know. The Frozen Queen, and I didn't write down the author. I'm sorry.
That's funny. It's just it's apparently a title that's been used more than once.
Exactly. If you look, there's like 16 Frozen Queens because you know what? I had a hard time finding it too.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you go on a Goodreads, no, then I'm onto Frozen. No, it's not Frozen. I don't know. The only thing is I noticed she has some names. You ever read a book and they have, if it's fantasy or science fiction, when they use names that you have to read 16 times, go, am I saying that right? Or they put too many vowels and consonants together.
Yeah. Or they'll pick names that are too similar and so you can't keep the characters apart because the names don't mean anything to you. I hate that.
That's the only thing in this book. But now she shortened them and I'm like, thank you. Yeah. But it's a pretty good book. Don't know it's fine. I'd like to go get it, but.
Well, you know, when you find it, I'll just add it to the show notes. How about that?
Yeah. What book are you reading now?
Well, I started Blueberries. Let's see. The full title is Blueberries, Essays Concerning Understanding by Elena Savage. It's a book of essays by an Australian writer, and it's on the long list for the Stella Prize, which is an Australian prize. And someone I follow on Instagram, Jacqueline Krupe, described her as Australia's Rebecca Solnit, if you know who that is.
No.
So I'm finding that to be pretty spot on because she's very feminist in her themes and intelligent, but not overly egotistical. So it's a good combination.
So it's short stories?
Essays. So nonfiction stuff. Yeah.
See, I know you read way above me. And that's why I like to listen to you because... I think it's because I'm a teacher and I get so tired of learning that I just need something to flow by my. I like to learn, but that's why I enjoy listening to you and the people that you read. You guys read way above me.
But you say that, and two out of the three books you talked about today were nonfiction things where you learned stuff.
I know, but well, I guess that's true. That, and that's what I tell everyone. I go, read what you like. I think yes. It's funny when people do start, like a lot of times people will love a book. And I'm like, oh, I just can't read that book. And I feel bad. I'm like, too bad. I've gotten over that. I'm past that part in my life.
Yeah.
I have one question for you. You're a librarian, correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So when I get a book, I just want to know, because I think this is true. Is there, you know, the barcode, is there any way when you look up a book that you can figure out by yourself if it's YA or mystery, or, you know, how some of these books, like we were talking about, they're in one section, but not one section. Is there like the mystery librarian code?
So it's not in the ISBN. The ISBN is telling you which country something is published in. But if you look in the inside front cover of a book, usually there's a brief Library of Congress.
Catalog
information. I just opened Winter's Orbit and it's going to prove me wrong. Of course.
No, you are right. Oh my gosh. I've learned today. I never thought, look at that.
See? Yeah. So it usually will tell you, like, especially if it's nonfiction, it'll usually indicate like which area of library it should be shelved in. And it, if it's for kids, it usually will say an age group, and usually on the back cover by the ISBN, it might say that too.
Well, I learned that.
Yeah.
That's me being a teacher and the kids tell me that.
Well, but honestly, a lot of times I'm like looking up books on the publisher site going like, literally, who is this book for?
See, that's what I was going to come up with. That I think they need to classify books a little easier. I'll have my Goodreads list and I'll be looking, and they'll always come and say, can I help you? And I'm like, here's me. I'm like, no, I have a goal. I'm going to find this book and it kills me. You know, the kids that I teach, they're only 10 years old. And I had to tell them last month, I said, you know, you guys, you weren't alive when Harry Potter came out.
Oh, dear.
And they looked at me and I said, I always tell them stories and I go, you guys, you know, I remember the summer that this lady, this other teacher that I knew was reading this book. And I said, what's that book? And she said, I don't know. It's called Harry Potter. She goes, it's on our kids' reading list. We don't even know what it's about. I can remember that. Wow. And thinking, why are you reading that book? And the kids were looking at me like, what? That's how young they are. It's just kind of funny when you teach kids that are, I have to keep thinking to myself, they're only 10 years old. They don't know.
I think I was in grad school the second time. So I was in library school. And I think the third book had come out, but they weren't on my radar because I was an adult. I was not reading kids' books. And all of my friends in library school were children's librarians to be. And so they're like, you have to read these. They're the most popular books in this entire age category. You have to read them. They're so good. And so I think I started around then. If you didn't have friends that read different things, you might never read other books. So that's important to know a lot of people that have different reading tastes, I think.
Exactly. And that's why I like to listen to you. And I have like about 3 or 4 podcasts.
Who else do you listen to? I always like to give people a boost, you know?
Okay. No, I listen to recently reading. Currently reading.
Currently. Yeah, that sounds
better. Yeah, I like them. And there are these two ladies that I listen to from Minnesota. They're called Lori and Julia. They have a talk show in Minnesota, and they read a book they have a author on once a week about. And I'm telling you, every book I've gotten from them, that's where I got this, the one that I'm reading right now. Every book I've got from them, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a great book. I think I found my book twins with those too.
Oh yeah. It's important to find those people. Maybe we can figure out this Frozen Queen situation then.
I have it in the other room if you want me to go get. I listen to the podcast too. The girl on there, she's like, she reads. And then I read that or listen to Sarah's Bookshelves. Oh, and what's Ann Bogle?
What should I read next?
Yeah, what should I read next? I think I get tired of, and I go from one to the other. Because if I hear someone, that's just me. It's just like, it's life.
First of all, I looked up Lori and Julia. And the book I think you're talking about is Frozen Crown by Greta Kelly.
Frozen Crown, that's it. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, that's fine. I just want to make sure we had it right in case people are interested.
I'm telling you. Those two, that they are interesting. They talk pop culture, but once a week they really get good authors on there. Hmm. And I got about 3 or 4 books and I get them. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're good. They're in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. Well, when you have people that give good recommendations, you stick with them.
I know. When I'm on screen for 8 hours a day straight, I just need some entertainment and not thinking.
Well, thank you for talking books with me, Kim.
No, I enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed it too. Thanks for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Reading Envy, or find a complete listing of our podcast episodes, as well as all of the books discussed on today's episode at readingenvy.com.